Welcome to The Rot Focus, a podcast for rotters, newbies, and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Rotters, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therotfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. A funny thing happened on the way through entertainment this past weekend. I read Mary Stewart's The Stormy Petrel. That's not the funny thing. Mary Stewart is my all-time favorite author. Wonderful character development, intriguing plots, lovely lyrical writing. She's a guaranteed satisfying entertainment. My favorite novel of hers is My Brother Michael, with The Moonspinners a close second. If you've seen the movie The Moonspinners, you haven't met Mary Stewart's book. I read The Stormy Petrel when it published years ago. The story didn't stick with me then. I don't know the reason. When I want a delicious read, I usually don't reach for The Stormy Petrel. This past weekend, however, I picked it up and settled in for a satisfying read. And now we're to the funny thing, for the protagonist, Rose, is a writer. Poetry, novels, and literary articles. And Stewart included several revealing passages about the writer's life, including, get this, writer's block. Some of what Stewart shared, because we all know she's drawing back the veil on her own writing, some of what she shared we've heard before in this series on Defeat Writer's Block. Yet, as is common for Stewart, some of what she shared we have not yet addressed because she has an uncommon take on it. Let's start with this passage. Midway through this short novel, Rose has decided to take advantage of a rainy day in the midst of her island vacation and write. She hasn't written very much during her vacation time so far, a poem, and very little on the science fiction novel she is also writing. It's the science fiction novel that will be her focus on this rainy day. Let me quote. Rose is narrating, I got back to work, by which I mean that I got my papers and notes out, then sat looking at them for what seemed like a dreary lifetime, and was really probably only 20 minutes. The words I had written, and had almost in the interval forgotten, mocked me and were meaningless. My notes told me what was to happen next, but my brain no longer knew how to move plot and people forward. Block. Complete block. I sat and stared at the paper in front of me and tried to blank out the present and get back into my story. Forward, that is, into my invented future and out of the world of queries and vague apprehensions. That first point, the time she spent staring at her notes, a dreary lifetime, and was really probably only 20 minutes. When we want desperately to write, when we set ourselves in our writing spaces and words do not come immediately, time stretches, an elastic cord that shows no sign of breaking and loses its elasticity, the ability to reform, that's our brains beginning to spiral into a writing block panic. Our brain deceives us about the passage of time, even as it hides words and ideas from us. Nothing here, it says. No, 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 nada, nope. Breaks in our writing sessions or days, maybe a week or two, creates this blankness. All that's happened is that the story has left active memory and squirreled into a deeper memory net. Because we have not traversed the pathway to that memory net and burned the spark of active memory, we think it's gone, lost, a blizzard of whiteout. As Stewart says, my notes told me what was to happen next, but my brain no longer knew how to move plot and people forward. Block. Complete block. Blanking the present to revive the memory of story becomes difficult. Ah, but Rose, and therefore Stewart, knows what to do. Quoting again, from experience I knew what to do. Write. Write anything. Bad sentences. Meaningless sentences. Anything to get the mind fixed again to that sheet of paper and oblivious of the real world. Write until the words begin to make sense. The cogs mesh. The wheels start to turn. The creaking movement quickens and becomes a smooth, oiled run. And then, with luck, exhaustion will be forgotten and the real writing will begin. I like Stewart's description here of what she needs to do. Write anything. Bad sentences, meaningless sentences, anything to get the mind fixed again to that sheet of paper and oblivious of the real world. We have to remove ourselves, to remove our active memory from the intervening, disruptive, and distracting present, to return to our story. Words have become a smoothed, oiled run, yet distractions can still occur. Can still destroy this connection with story. As she says, look up once from that paper, get up from the table to make coffee or stir the fire, even just raise your head to look at the view outside the window, and you may as well give up until tomorrow or forever. The words become lost when the static of disruptions interfere. For this reason, we shut off our phones, or put them in another room. We close the door on others in our house. We look for music or nature sounds, anything to create white noise that will drown disrupting conversations or corridors, truck engines, and barking dogs. For Rose in Stormy Petrel, Stewart writes, it was the rain that saved me. I could not have looked out of the window if I had tried. The chores were all done, and there was nothing whatever to do except sit at that table and write. With white noise of the rain, with no chores looming and no conversations nagging, she can re-enter the flow of story. Stewart continues, I wrote, a year or so later, or it may have been an hour, I crumpled up 4 sheets of paper and threw them to the floor and started another, and I was there. And in another light year or two, I was through the word barrier, and the book had suddenly reached the stage, the wonderful moment to get to, where I could walk right into my imaginary country and see things that I had not consciously created, and listen to people talking and watch them moving, all apparently independent of me. I love that year or so later, and maybe just an hour. Time stretches when we're in the flow. We can't reckon it. It is meaningless to our active memory, now engaged with story and not the present. We are in the time frame of the story, moving at the speed of the words on pages or the electronic screen. We connect at that level, the word level, words as a group of phrases, a cluster of ideas, and time flows as ideas flow. Notice that Stewart shares that the first 4 pages were static. Rose crumpled up 4 sheets and tossed them, a manual clearing of her mind. Then she returned to story and was there. And in the fantastical time of story, a light year or two, she reaches the story realm and walks straight into the reality of story. The reality of story, that's what those words poured out in flow are to us writers. We enter into that fictional world and it becomes our reality. The characters live and breathe and talk. This imaginary world is as vivid and vibrant as the actual world to us. Everything seems to happen independent of us. We are merely recorders of the story reality. Yet that story realm fades. Our actual self or the actual world intrudes. For some reason, we hear the ding of the phone that's two rooms away. Stuart's words are, "I came out of it," as if a hypnotist snapped his fingers and woke us from that imaginary world when we manipulate people and actors and events. The point at which we walk away from our writing, not leave our imaginary reality, but actually stop the day's writing session, that point matters. Long breaks can be detrimental to recovering the story. Early in the novel, Rose says, "I finished the section I had been writing. An idea left in mid-paragraph tends to vanish very quickly. Then I took myself and my candle early to bed." We shouldn't leave mid-paragraph or mid-scene, not mid-argument or mid-conflict. Bring those to their natural end. Create a little list as the starting point for the next session. It's important to know where we're going next, for our subconscious will start writing on that little list and might even trash it completely for new and surprising ideas. Early in the Stormy Petrel, Rose had a complete idea for a poem, only to have that idea shatter into glass shards when a disruption occurs. Days pass. Then she decides to return to the poem. It must have been whispering so hushed that she knew she was returning to it, but did not obviously remark upon it. Stuart writes, "I sat at the kitchen table, staring at the blind, white blankness in front of me, and slowly, like a clear spring welling up from the common earth, the poem rose and spread and filled me, unstoppable as flood water. Technique unknotting even as it ran, like snags rolled away on the flood. When it comes, it is worth everything in the world. There is too much easy talk about inspiration, but at such times one sees it exactly for what it is, a breathing in of all the experience, all apprehension of beauty, all love. As a fire needs air to make it burn, so a poem needs to be fueled by each one of these, and the greatest of these is love." Rose's poem rose from the depths, a symbolic spring flooding up, which gave the poem again to her. Stuart calls this inspiration, to receive the whole, and sometimes writing works that way, for short pieces, like poems and articles, blogs and songs. We may receive the whole, shining behind our eyes, and we have to get the words down before the spring water runs away from us and forms a clear pool elsewhere. Novels and short stories, those usually do not come to us as whole entities. We receive pieces of them, the river delta, ports upriver, the headwaters, the deeply slow, wide river that flows inexorably to the gulf, all those separate pieces that make up the long river as a whole. We may receive titles and taglines in a whole picture. We may receive characters in the situation. Usually, though, we craft these, then work out the other parts of story and novel. Stuart also talks of a particular type of writer's block. When we know what needs to happen, but we don't quite know how to develop it on paper. Of Rose's writings and her own personal storytelling, Stuart says, "Difficulties were rapidly threatening to become too much for my characters, and consequently for me too. In those circumstances, I have always found it wise to abandon effort and leave the subconscious mind to sort things out, while the conscious mind does something quite different, goes for a walk, for example, and takes a look at the Hamilton House and that delectable stretch of milk-white sand bordering the Mashar. Abandon the effort. Let the subconscious work it out. I think better stories occur when we don't dash through them, but give them a chance to steep on the back burner. Seek nature, the solitude of nature, not chitter-chattering folks or entertainment developed by others. Let the mind turn over the natural sounds and images, smells and sensations from nature. The pace is not frenetic. The mind can work with these images, shifting them around. When we return and take up our pens, we will have a solution to our problems. Or we may have to sleep and dream out that solution, whether we remember the dream or not. Lastly, although Stuart presents this early in Stormy Petrel, the character of Rose does not concentrate her writing solely on poetry or science fiction or those two and no others. "It is time, I think, to make a confession," Rose speaks, and very likely Mary Stuart does as well. "Though I was a student of literature, and I believe a reasonably good teacher, and loved my work, and though I was, moreover, a serious poet who had gained some recognition in circles even outside my own university, my writing life was not confined to poems and articles or even lectures. I wrote science fiction. Not only wrote it, but published it and made what seemed to a poorly paid lecturer to be a very acceptable amount of money with it. Under another name, of course, The Flights of Hugh Templar's Imagination paid Rose Fenimore very well indeed. They also gave her a much-valued safety valve for an almost too active imagination. The pure invention of these tales, the exercise of what at its best can be called the high imagination, allow the writer, in Dryden's phrase, to take the clogs off his fancy and to escape the world at will." Rose, and therefore Stuart, cast herself into other types of projects. She did not limit her creativity. Any type of writing, fiction and nonfiction and poetry, became fulfillment for her muse. What was it we said earlier in this series? The more we work with ideas, the more ideas we have. And thus, the more we work with words, the more words will cling to us for expression. As Stuart says, and paraphrases John Dryden, "The exercise of high imagination will allow the writer to take the clog of his fancy and escape the world at will." I don't know if writing itself is an escape from the world. I know reading was and is, for me, an escape. For our readers, if we can help them escape the stresses of life, if we're providing a few small insights, then we've fulfilled our dreams of being a writer. And no writer's block can stop that. The Right Focus turns its lens on every writer's secret monster, writer's block. We say the mantra writer's block doesn't exist, but something more than simple disruptions and distractions can interfere with our writing, creating insurmountable walls. The Right Focus, in the series Defeat Writer's Block, analyzes the three most common types of writer's block and offers solutions to overcome and defeat this monster looming over the writer's desk. The best solution, though, is Leo Tolstoy's mantra, "No days without lines, nulla dies sine linea." Make that your own mantra. Information for this series comes from host M.A. Lee's guidebook, Think Like a Pro, a new advent for writers, showcasing 7 lessons to change your perspective from hobby writer to pro writer. See the show notes for links. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by Emma Lee from Writers Inc. Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mine your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.